The date is October 26, 1984, and we are watching The Gods Must Be Crazy. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
Hello and welcome to I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the nostalgia to see if they still hold up. My name is Sean Wells, and while Colin is away honing his craft as a thespian, joining me, our official substitute co-host, a man who makes me smile just by popping up on my Zoom screen, the warthog to my rhinoceros.
Hello. I'm Aaron Knowles, and I may not be a Coke bottle, but I am a gift from God. Psych!
bet you didn't have Warthog and Rhinoceros in your co-host intro bingo card tonight.
Definitely did not.
No? Yeah. I figured, you know, that's a fun one to go, because they're both key parts in this movie, right? So yeah. They're important in the exact same way. Well, this week, we're looking at October 1984 with a big old asterisk, when the movies and theaters were Once Upon a Time in America, The Razor's Edge, Body Double, subject of episode 92, The Terminator, and of course our movie for today, The Gods Must Be Crazy, which earned $30 million on a $5 million budget. Very impressive, but the big old asterisks, I'll get that out of the way now. I mean, September 10th, 1980 was the release date in Johannesburg, South Africa. Yep. That's the official release date.
Joburg.
And then it like spent the next 4 years premiering all over Europe. And then October 26th, 1984 was the American wide release. The New York premiere was like a couple weeks earlier. The Canadian release date was October 4th, 1985. Wow. So I didn't know what number to go with. So I'm like, everything in the world is sort of America-centric, and we've got our American co-host on with us tonight. So I'll pluck that number as the one to choose, the American wide release.
Oh,
that's a lot.
That is a lot. Well, much like the white man's interference in the rest of the world, it's impossible to avoid this spoiler alert.
Oh, boy. Well, I found four taglines for the poster this week. Not the greatest assortment, but here we go. Number one, a sly comedy from Africa.
Huh. Okay.
Yep. Yep. Number two, it's primitive. It's poignant, it's perturbing, but it will make you laugh, cheer, and shout.
That's a bit presumptuous.
It is, yeah. I wonder why they went all peas. Like, what is the significance of the peas with those? I don't know. It's very much like a 1960s, you know, like horror movie type. You know, it's shocking in 3D, the swamp monster, you know, things like that.
In
I don't
Technicolor.
Know. In tech, there, exactly, yeah. Well, number three, at last, a comedy everyone can laugh with.
Again, presumptuous.
Yeah, yeah. Especially for all the people that protested this movie saying it was racist, but we'll get there. Number four, the critics are raving, the natives are restless. And the laughter is nonstop.
I feel like they were so hopeful with these taglines.
Or maybe the sly comedy from Africa was the first tagline they ever came up with, and the rest were just kind of, as it grew in popularity, moving around the world to all these European premieres, then they started getting a little bit ballsier, being like, no, people actually like this fucking movie. Let's throw some exclamation marks on the poster.
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
Very true.
Well, may not be a very good description of the movie, so let's go to Aaron for a 60-second synopsis.
Whew, I'm not gonna lie. This movie had me stumped. All right. Let's do this. You have African gangs killing African dignitaries. You got white women fleeing job stress to help schools in Africa because for some reason she thinks it's better life than corporate America. Talk about hashtag first world problems. You have probably the most incompetent shit scientist on the planet. And I literally mean shit scientist because he studies poop. who can't even handle a trek to pick up the random white lady from the airport. And then you have the early equivalent of real-world Boko Haram, which is offensive in itself, made into a joke about kidnapping African women and children. I don't know what is more offensive, the portrayal of Africans being inept or the fact that the most inept white dude was the only one that could solve the problem. I really feel like the moral of this story is very much overlooked. Coveting items will create rifts in any society. But fuck it. Leave it to the white guy to clean up even that mess.
With the shroud of apartheid hanging over this movie. Oh, dear. So the gods must be crazy. This is one of those movies that it stuck with me from a young age. It was shown to me at a young age, and it's just a movie that I've always known. And watching again, I realized that I was very familiar with about 2/3 of the storyline of this movie. The 1/3 that I completely forgot was the whole fucking Civil War, mercenary part. That was the part that I had blanked out all these years. Yeah. But I remember all the slapstick comedy and the fun Frodo-like quest to take the Coke bottle to Mordor.
And I didn't even think of that.
So this is one of those movies that it's just always stuck with me, and I've grown up naive, not realizing that there was a lot of love for this movie, but also a lot of hate for this movie. Like, I've never known that. But anyway, Aaron, what is your history with The Gods Must Be Crazy?
I've known about this movie for a very long time. I've never watched it.
Mm-hmm.
And okay. I feel like maybe there was a reason behind that. And I feel like maybe it was because my parents didn't really like it.
Okay.
But I don't know for sure. I'm actually kind of curious. I might ask my parents about that. Because this movie came out a year before I was born. And, mm-hmm. I mean, the second one came out when I was 4. I don't know. I don't have a lot of experience in this movie before watching this one.
Okay. Well, I thought you had seen it before. So this is exciting. I look forward to a first timer's take. I mean, because really, we've got 44 years on this movie now. So it's like when it was first released, like if we go back to that 1980 release date. So yeah. Okay. Well, here we go. Let's jump into The Gods Must Be Crazy, directed by Jamie Ace. Or it's also pronounced eyes. It's spelled U-Y-S. So I just like the fact that his name's Jamie Ace. I like that
Jamie
better.
Ace.
Jamie Ace. Produced by Jamie Ace and written by Jamie Ace. You know, he's all him. That's what this movie is. Yeah. The American record for this movie is it ran for 532 consecutive days at Oaks Theater in Cupertino, California.
Interesting.
Yeah. And they only stopped showing it because the reel ended up catching fire and destroying a good portion of the reel. And it was just cheaper to not buy a new reel. Like it wasn't worth it to buy a new reel.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I mean, you would think after that many days of ticket sales, it might be worth it to get a new one.
I would think. But yeah, 530. I mean, this is Titanic level numbers of days in the theater. I mean, Titanic ran for at least a year.
True.
I'm pretty sure you could still get Titanic once you were in a year. So, yeah, this movie, straight out of South Africa, it was released as a Botswanan film because at the time, the informal international embargo on anything South Africa. So they released it as a Botswanan film, even though everything was financed South African. It was a South African director.
Damn, so, that's interesting.
Yeah, they knew they'd get hate. Well, okay, let's want to go over this cast list because I've never heard of any of them. Or
yeah, so the cast list. Marius Wyers is Andrew Stane.
Mm-hmm.
I was like looking at his filmography and I mean, he was in Blood Diamond.
Yeah. Okay.
It looks like he's been in a lot. I mean, he looks like he's been in a, so, well, I mean, I guess to clarify and clear something up, this movie was dubbed.
Mm-hmm.
And so it looks like to me that he was actually German, or at least spoke German, or might have been. I should probably just look at his profile and see where he was. He was born in South Africa. He's from Johanna, South Africa. But see, he obviously.
Yeah, with what I have, he doesn't have a voice listed, though. So he must have done his own voice for the English dub.
Okay. Well, I'm pretty sure in South Africa, don't they speak, like, it's Dutch?
It's Afrikaans.
Afrikaans, yeah.
Yeah, which is similar to Dutch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So maybe these are Dutch films that he's also been in, looking at his filmography. But yeah.
Yeah.
Blood Diamond and some of the bigger designing. He was actually on Designing Women in an episode.
Interesting.
A show called Nurses, which I know isn't too old. That was back in the 90s.
Yeah, I've heard of that one, yeah.
Deep Water 6, which is actually one of my favorite old science fiction films.
Oh, I remember
films.
That one, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So he has had a very prevalent acting career.
And international, yeah.
Yes, and international. Kate Thompson was played by Sandra Prinsloo.
Mm-hmm. And then I've got English dub Janet Michad Wells. So, I mean, not one of my aunts that I know of.
She's been in, I mean, quite a few things leading up all the way until, like, 2020 is, like, her last acting credit. So she has definitely...
Still going.
Still going. No, she's still in stuff up to 2024. Yeah.
Okay.
That's pretty cool. Okay, so next we have...
As G, yeah, the Bushman.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and he's Enzao Toma. That's the one I was practicing. On the DVD, the guy keeps, there is a documentary about, he went back to find this guy, and he keeps calling him Zhao. So, I mean, maybe the pronunciation I found is wrong. But yeah, that little line with the, it looks like an equal sign that's been crossed out. That's the palatal click symbol.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
It's a fascinating language to listen to them all sitting around talking.
Yes.
Like, what a complicated thing to try to figure out.
To be honest, like, I was, like, watching this when the movie first opened on this, the characters of, like, the tribespeople.
Yeah.
I very much was expecting, like, the entire movie to be, like, a documentary-esque type thing. And I was actually, like, super involved in the entire thing, like, listening to them speak and then learning about, like, the, you know, what they were doing and the tools and all that stuff. And, yeah, this movie... We'll get into that, I'm sure. It just takes an interesting turn with the tribe and, you know, who they are and the fact that they're supposed to be untouched by, you know, the world. And the whole thing was wild.
Yeah.
Then you got Sam Boga. It's played by Lou Verwey. And then you have Mpudi by Michael Teese. And, I mean, is there anybody else that you really want to, like, go into?
I would shout out Ken Gampu as the president. He was in the only other South African movie we've done on this show, which was Kill and Kill Again, when we had Raphael Xavier on the show. And, Ken Gampu was in that one. So I know he's a big deal in South Africa.
Okay, yeah, I was just seeing if there's anything in his
He might be in anything else. And Jamie Ace is the reverend. The director, writer, producer is the Reverend.
Okay.
You found something about Ken Gampu.
Yeah. This is really interesting. Okay, so I'm looking at his filmography, and there's actually quite a few things that I'm looking at right now. One that stood out to me, King Solomon's Treasure. I've seen that one. I see The Gods Must Be Crazy, 1980. Kill and Kill Again, which you mentioned in 1981.
Yeah.
And then you scroll up just a little bit. You got City of Blood. The Emissary, and where'd it go? American Ninja 4, which sounds like a very terrible film, and I'm sure it was.
Oh,
where did
probably
it go?
Was, yeah.
Okay, here we go. 1994, The Air Up There. Have you ever heard of that one?
Yes. Yes! He's the basketball player.
Yep.
Isn't he? Yep. Okay.
Yep. So that was Kevin Bacon.
Yep. And that is how you link Enzao Toma to Kevin Bacon.
Yeah, 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon.
Right there, yeah.
You're welcome. I know it took a moment to get there, but that's where I was going.
Yeah, that was the whole point of that. Yeah. No, I like I said, I don't know who any of these people are, unfortunately. I'm sure they're all fantastic people, except the ones that aren't. So, you know,
From the filmography and of some of these actors, though, it kind of looks like, and I would actually be really surprised, because it seems like there's a lot, especially recently, the last probably decade, I feel like I've seen more South African cinema than obviously previous to that. Mm-hmm. It would seem that it's not a small community. It's not a small industry in South Africa, because I've seen plenty of television shows and, yeah, you know, and a lot of like movies come out of South Africa. But going through some of these characters and looking at the filmography of those actors, they've all kind of almost revolved around each other in a lot of films. So maybe it's just like how we have, you know, some like A movie actors, B movie actors, C movie actors who tend, yeah, to be in the same films and run in the same circles.
Yeah,
that might be the same thing. So it's weird to think about like another, I don't even want to say cultures, but another country's like cinema industry.
I always feel the same way about Bollywood. I feel,
yeah, exactly,
the same way about, you know, like Chinese martial arts movies, like that kind of, like, I always, it does boggle my mind, because you always think of like Hollywood as the center of the movie universe. And it's like, mm-hmm, no, more people are watching Bollywood films than,
oh, yeah,
some of these blockbusters. Like, you, yeah, know, congratulations on your $1 billion, Barbie, but hey, it's not going to be the same as some of these huge Bollywood hits out there, because you've got a billion people right there that are going to watch it.
Absolutely. There's a, so I don't know if you know this, but, and I'll have to send you a link to it, but there's actually like a Bollywood MCU.
Oh, is there? Okay.
Yeah. It's like their whole like superhero like universe they have going on. And my buddy was telling me about it, and it's like, I did some research on it, and it's pretty cool. And I actually
like, are they all off brand from regular,
no,
MCU? No, it's the
all
it's
their
all
own
original,
yeah,
creations.
Yeah, OCs.
Yeah.
All,
wow,
OCs.
Okay.
It's pretty, they're some of them are very cool. And I actually, so my buddy who, you know, he and I have always been into like, and this, I know we're kind of deviating here, but we, you know, we've been really good friends since high school, and he's the one that kind of got me into some animes and superhero films and things like that. And he's the one that introduced me to these superheroes, and he was saying like, yeah, you gotta check these out, because they're actually really good. So yeah, I've been doing a little bit research into those, and I'm excited, because I have them like saved like playlists. I haven't watched a lot of them yet. The other thing I was gonna say is, there was a restaurant, it was like an Indian all-you-can-eat buffet that I used to go to when I was stationed in Fort Campbell. Mm-hmm. And they always had Bollywood films on, Bollywood action films.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I loved going there to eat. Not the food was great, but the TV was even better. The movies were so good.
Right on. Yeah. Yeah, we've got a big Sikh community in our city, and you know,
yeah,
so I see a lot around here.
Even on the, yeah, West Coast, there's a big Indian community.
Yeah. Right on. Okay, so yeah, let's get into the film. Now, my favorite gimmick of this film has always been that documentary style. Now,
yeah,
I mean, you say that you were expecting it the whole way through, but I feel like they used it for the main character, Chi.
Yes.
Right? That was the only, you know, and so I like how they kept dropping back into it when the story started following him. But
yes,
one of the things that I loved about this documentary, especially about seeing it now, is when they transfer from the tribal stuff into the city stuff, and the way this David Attenborough type documentarian is narrating the fact that, you know, at 8:00, everyone pretends to look busy, and then at 10:30 everyone takes a moment to, you know, takes 15 minutes, like just the way that he's narrating it the same way as the nature stuff that we were watching before. And I think that's kind of a fascinating take on it, but then it does drop off, and it's,
yes,
I could have used it in a few other places.
Well, and that's, I think, you that's know? Where it kind of like became a little inconsistent for me, because I would have absolutely have loved if the entire movie was like that.
Yeah,
I think it would have been a very good almost running gag to keep it through, like even the West, you know, the Western society type,
mm-hmm,
portions of it, you know, talking to, like making it seem like we're just like, you know, these wild beasts, you know, going through our day-to-day life, you know? And so, yeah, I would have liked that.
Yeah, like the stuff that the documentarian is saying is hilarious. Now, if you want that, by the way, you should check out a movie called The Mating Habits of the Earthbound Human.
Okay.
It's starring Sean Astin, and some supermodel as well. Hilarious movie. It's all done National Geographic style, following them into the club and everything like that. And it's narrated straight the whole way. I love it. The thing I love about this narration is if you really listen to it in The Gods Must Be Crazy, it's the guy is saying some hilarious shit. Like the fact that, you know, like they're peaceful people and, you know, like even snakes, they're not scared of snakes. They just need to know to stay away from the sharp end.
Yeah, you know, like, I did laugh at that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I thought it was all very funny. What kind of patience would it take to collect dew, though? They're getting like 2 drops a day.
The guy was literally like licking grass. And I'm just like, but again, like that's I don't know. I couldn't tell if these were actually like tribal people or if they were just people like almost props.
Well, see, okay. Now here's the thing. And this is why it was controversial. Like in fact, when it first came out, it was banned in Trinidad and Tobago because of pressure from groups that called it racist. And this was part of the reason is because even by 1980, there were no longer any untouched tribes in Africa like this.
Mm-hmm.
So when you watch the documentary of this guy going back to find the star of this film and see how he's living, everyone is wearing clothes. There is a bit more of a civilization. It's not all about living off of the land quite as much, mm-hmm. but they are still a very, you know, off the earth type people. Just not to this extent. And so that's part of the reason this film was criticized was it's like, well, yeah, those people don't exist. That's not, you know, and so that's why part of why it was called so racist.
See that. And that's part, to be honest, that's the part that almost least offensive to me.
Yeah.
You know, like because I mean, you do have, you know, groups and tribes out there in parts of the world that are still living off the land, like living very basic existences. Mm-hmm. You know, for me, it was just the white man in this movie was driving around, like was, you know, doing the jobs, was a scientist. The only black people that we saw like really doing anything were, you know, like almost inept or incompetent or criminals or like, I don't know. It just felt.
The only like real competent black man in this was his assistant.
Well, the dignitaries, like
the president like the
president and some people in his cast. But even those guys, you know, like I don't know. It was a little bit frustrating.
Yeah. But see, and I guess that's where it's tough for me because I just laughed at the comedy of it.
Yeah. Right?
And I didn't think of it that way.
Yeah. I tried laughing at the bad of the comedy. Like the fact that this when the gang came in and like shot up the boardroom,
yeah,
or the meeting room, and like the guy has like a bandage on his chest, like he got shot in the chest.
Yeah.
And he's just like, "Oh, they just put a bandaid over this chest wound of a shotgun or shot of a bullet." And it's just like, dude, all these guys just have superficial wounds from like literally being like just laid out with mowed down. Like, this is ridiculous.
But see, I mean, I found the bit where they kick in the door and then their guns get stuck. Right.
Yeah. Like,
I was laughing at the comment. And so I guess that's my white privilege, I guess. I did not see the veil over top of it. But understanding the time that it came out and where it came from, I can see that, oh yeah, okay, it was a little bit extra racist because of how these characters are being portrayed. I saw it as just wacky comedy.
Yeah, I definitely saw the attempt at wacky comedy. I think that just, and I wouldn't even say it's too much of a veiled effort. Like, I don't. Maybe I'm being overly sensitive, perhaps. I just feel like, again, from my perspective, it's like everything seems to be like it's all goofy. Like, no, nothing that these guys are doing as at least as successfully as the white man in this the white men in this film are attempting to do things. Like, even the, okay, the banana scene, the scene in the banana forest.
Okay, yeah, with the bazookas, yeah.
It's, yes, it's slapstick comedy. It's like, you know, Red Skeleton. It's like, you know, it's...
Yeah, and it's, you know, got, it's the film itself is like filmed with a different frame rate so that they can speed it up to intentionally give you that type of Benny Hill comedy.
Exactly. And yeah, I mean, I see that is consistently done throughout the film, which, you know, like I noticed, especially like in the portion where he's trying to take the Jeep to pick up, what's her name? Sandra, you know, he's got to like,
I laughed so hard at the shtick with the Jeep and the gate. Like, I died
stupid.
So many times. But I found it so funny. Like, I don't often laugh out loud, but I was, like, absolutely howling with that one. Yeah. I found it so funny. And then the waiting for it to roll back to him, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there also wondering how many of these stunts is he doing himself? Like, it looks like it's him standing on the hood steering and all that stuff, right? Like, it's...
Even she did it at one
point. Yeah, her hanging out on the roof. Yeah, so... So I found it very funny. It was the Civil War stuff that I forgot, that I'm like, this is the stuff that I don't need, because this guy with his bumbling antics, I found him so funny. Just like every time he knocked over a table and it just went on for like 3 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, like, he was such a great physical comedian. And I guess that's what I was looking at the whole time with this one and laughing at that. Yeah,
I don't want to bring any negativity to the table. I think that it might be how some people look at like British comedy.
Yeah,
you know, I love British comedy. I love dry humor. Mm-hmm. I think I am, me personally, slapstick only goes so far.
Okay,
like I can appreciate some. I think I can appreciate, I know I can appreciate some physical comedy, some slapstick. I just think that for probably, if I take a step back and I do some self-understanding and some reanalysis of the movie, I think for me it was just more so the lack of consistency in the humor and how the movie was made.
Yeah. Okay. I can see that. I mean, they do have a few different ideas going on.
Yes.
Because they do have the documentary, and then they do have, like, yeah, all this other stuff that's going on.
Yeah, there's, a romance portion between Stain and Sandra. There's the documentary part with G. There's the Civil War portion. Like, there's, like, three stories, at least, that are converging all together.
Yeah. And every once in a while, they do cross paths.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, of course, there is one item that is the crux of all of it.
The Coke bottle.
Yeah. And I think I need to talk about everything else in Sponsorship Corner. Absolutely. I called it last week, too, where I said that, you know, I've already got Coke written as a sponsor.
Yep.
And, yeah, always on the lookout for product placements in movies. This week, The Gods Must Be Crazy is brought to you by Coca-Cola, 7-Up, BMW, Mercedes and Ford Vehicles, Colgate Toothpaste, Air Botswana, and Sony Electronics. Because Caucasians are too damn tall. Plus the fictional Jack Hines Safari Lodge. And this has been Sponsorship Corner.
Caucasians are too damn tall.
Now, I have to say, I love the idea of being able to just... set my car to cruise control and then stand up and go to the back of my car for a drink and then come back, and you can just leave it coasting because it's just a big open plane.
Oh my God. There's that and the part where Stain has to, like, remember it's stuck in the mud?
Yeah.
And then it's driving off and he's got to, like, open the back, jump in it, and then catch it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Stupid. But yeah, that fucking... drink, like mini bar, or like I'd say like fully stocked bar.
Yeah.
On autopilot.
Yeah, for his safari tours.
Yeah.
Yeah. Aye, aye, aye.
We can delve into the plot a little bit more, but yeah. So yeah, the bottle is apparently dropped from a plane. It's dropped into this area with this, you know, apparently unexplored, uninfiltrated, just a tribe in the middle of Africa.
Yeah, and the documentarian says they have nothing harder than wood or bone, and I want to call bullshit. There's got to be a rock around somewhere.
A rock! Thank you! I just got to know, like, they beat this fucking glass bottle against everything, and it did not break.
Yeah, that's some thick glass, man.
At one point, they're just tossing it in the air, and it's literally concussing people.
Yep.
As it lands, and they're like, nope, won't break.
Yeah. Part two is someone finds the bottle at the bottom of the cliff and it still hasn't broken.
That's what I figured. I was like,
I have no idea. I don't remember part two.
Okay. I was going to say the post credit scene is the next tribe picking it up.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay. Now, the rhino was fake, right?
I believe so.
Okay. But I think most of the other animals were actually real.
Yes.
Which is pretty impressive. Yeah. They did some. Especially fancy stuff with some lion. Yeah, we got lions, we got elephants, we got giraffes. Yeah.
I got to ask you this because I know you did quite a bit of digging into this movie. Was there any issues with animal harm or any protesting of the use of the animals in this movie?
Not that I came across.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because at one point, there's like, I mean, they, not poisoned, that elk at the beginning?
Yeah. He gives them a sedative.
Yeah, they sedate that. And then there's that one elephant that's just sleeping there. Like, yeah. I'm just curious. I mean, I don't know. They had a lot of really, like, good use of animals, like, mm-hmm. on set instead of just, like, having, like, fake fucking, you know, animals or fake props. You know, I think they did a good job with that.
Yeah, the only fake one is the rhino stamping out fires.
Which I'm sorry. Maybe you could explain that to me. So on the way back, after Stain is picked up, Sandra.
Yeah.
Right? They stop for the night.
Yeah. Get stuck in the mud.
They start a fire. And then he, like, it's like a running gag because he's like, every time they ask him about he's like, I told her about the rhino.
Yeah, it's the rhino. It's the, yeah.
And, like, he's like, I don't want to talk about it. Like, come on.
Yeah, well, that is the running joke of,
yeah.
Yeah, because there's the one point when he comes back and he goes, you don't want to talk about it? I don't want to talk about it.
I don't want to talk about it. Yeah, and then everybody else started saying it.
Yeah, and but just I think that's just the character. I mean, they know that when it comes to women, he's going to fuck it all up.
Yeah.
Yeah. We got off the Coke bottle pretty quickly there. I mean, I guess that we're back at the story. Yeah, we've got the Coke bottle. It's the hardest thing these guys have ever seen. And they start to covet it. This tribe has never known how to covet an item because there's never been something where there's only one of it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so they end up cursing this thing because it ends up bringing violence to the tribe because people are now fighting over it.
They call it the evil thing, don't they?
Yeah. Yeah, we get the point that, you know, he tries to bury it and a hyena ends up digging it up because it smells the blood. And through wacky circumstances, it ends up back at the camp. Yeah, so.
And then then across some poor kid's head where it still doesn't break.
Yeah. And so our main guy, Chi, is tasked with throwing it off the edge of the earth and he goes on his quest to destroy the ring. So, my precious. Now I think we can officially get off Chi for a little while because, you know, he doesn't come back later until later when he hears the noisy animal thunder past. So, yeah, now we're on to... Yeah, I mean, we already talked about the guys busting in to assassinate the president. We've already talked about that part. So we've got a whole, like, car chase going on through the middle of this movie as well.
Yep, yep.
Yep, yeah, so there we go. We go.
the guys who, the gang, I guess I'd call them a gang.
Yeah, the rebels? They seem to, like, the bad guys, right?
Terrorists?
Is the president the good guy in this?
I'm pretty sure the president's the good guy.
Yeah.
I mean, he definitely didn't go there and murder anybody, at least not that we saw.
Yeah, but is he a corrupt president? Did he deserve it? Did he have it coming? Was he wearing that tight dress and he had it coming? You know? No, that was a terrible sexual harassment joke. So, yeah.
Wow.
The only time I've ever heard she had it coming.
We here on A Used to Like This One do not condone sexual harassment or sexual
assault.
No matter what you're wearing.
Absolutely not. No. Yes.
It is consent only.
That was said in a satirical way.
Yes. Yes, yes. It was. But for the people who are...
Yeah, I can just cut it out.
No, you're good. So yeah, we got the car chase, but they lose them in the banana forest. Oh, you know what? They don't even lose them because like the police run out of gas.
Yeah.
At one point, but they end up in. So I'll say this: I laughed at the interrogation scene.
Yeah.
On the helicopter,
the pushing them out of the helicopter.
Yeah. So they're like, you know, the cops are pretending to be on a helicopter. The blades are a Warren, and they're questioning one of the guys they've captured from the gang. And they're like, "Tell us where your guy is. Tell us where they're located." And they pretend to push him out of the helicopter, but it's still on the ground, still on the solid ground. So the guy's fine, but he starts crying and blubbering. He's like, "I'll tell you. They're in the." I don't know why he sounds like Seinfeld. "I'll tell you.
What is the deal with this coup?"
What is the deal with this assassination? I don't know.
something like that.
Yeah, so he tells them they're in the banana trees, banana forest. So then they use a helicopter, they take the helicopter, they chase what looks like a car tank type thing.
Yeah, something.
Into the banana forest.
It almost looks like the float at the end of Animal House.
It does! Thank you! It does. And the soldiers, the gang, they
don't know how to operate weapons.
Somehow they've got this two-part rocket launcher concoction thing that they like put together. But every time the guy comedically puts in the rocket, it comedically falls back out.
Yeah. Yeah.
But and then at one point he somehow blows up a whole bundle of bananas, but does not destroy anything else. But
no,
then...
somehow that rocket is stopped by bananas. Like, if you want to stop a rocket, just strap a big old bunch of bananas to your chest. You'll be fine.
Yep. And then he manages to get one off. And then here's comedy, okay? The rocket gets shot off, and then for a split second, this movie had the graphics, you call them.
You saw the wires. The special effects. Is that what you're saying?
You didn't even see just the wire. It was like a can, like some kind of bundle. Like the helicopter disappears. It's now a bundle of something, and that explodes.
Yep.
it was terrible.
$5 million budget, Aaron.
That's true. And that's also in South African dollars.
Yeah, I know. The star of the film got paid like less than $2,000. So, yeah. But I guess it was made up to him later in life. But by that time, he was old and had tuberculosis.
I did want to point this out, though. And there... one of the goofs that's in this film is during this car chase scene, when they're leaving the village, very clearly does a chicken get run over.
Yeah. I'll have to go back and look at that. I missed that.
R.I.P. chicken.
R.I.P. chicken. So I guess they couldn't honestly put no animals were harmed in the... I mean, yeah. I saw something in the credits about, you know, animal training by, but I did not see anything that said no animals were harmed. So
yeah,
at the very least, they got one chicken on this film. Body count of one.
I hope they at least, like, cooked it.
Yeah. So okay, the woman that like what was her name? Kate, right?
Kate. Sandra?
Kate. No, the actress's name is Sandra.
Oh
Kate.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah. Kate Thompson.
So she was a reporter.
Yep, she was a journalist.
Okay, yeah, that's what I thought because that scene was very brief in the beginning. But yeah. she has decided to go and become a teacher in the Savannah.
I love how the catalyst for this decision is she goes to a diner to eat, sits down next to somebody, and the woman who she sits next to looks at her and goes, "Are the voices in my head bothering you?"
Yeah.
No.
Hey, we're just coming off our March Madness month. I mean, we've got our gods must be crazy. I also got to say, I found it refreshing just going right to the very top of the movie. The fact that there wasn't even a so-and-so presents, there were no title cards. It's you've got the Earth and then boom, gods must be crazy. We're into the movie immediately.
Yep.
You know, I just got to throw that out there.
There's no, you know, foreplay.
No. No, none whatsoever.
Just jump in with your feet first.
All the way. Yeah. Yep.
So, yeah, Kate quits her job as a journalist. Apparently, she's in Johannesburg already.
Yes.
I thought she was somewhere else for some reason.
You did say the American dream in your 60-second synopsis. But no, she's in, like, the one major city that South Africa has. So which?
Well, sorry, the South African dream. Okay.
Yeah, the South African dream.
I apologize.
Dream. Yeah. To dream the South African dream.
From sea to shining sea. Okay. So she quits her job. Well, I don't know why this American woman is in Johannesburg as a journalist, but okay, cool. So she quits her job to become a village school teacher. And eventually, I guess we're skipping over too much if we say that she gets... that's way pretty much the entire movie. If we just go from her going to be a journalist to being kidnapped by fucking Sam Boga.
She has to meet the hero of the movie first.
Yes.
She has to meet her Dr. and Stain.
Yes, Dr. Stain. For some... Okay. I know I shouldn't expect a lot from this movie, and it's not because it's South African. It's just because it's low budget and also it's a comedy.
Yeah.
Okay. So let me get that out of the way. But why is this scientist there studying fecal matter first off?
Mm-hmm.
You never get that.
Later on, we do see him with a telescope. So he's also like tracking migration patterns and stuff like that. Like he's doing all sorts of ecological thing. And I think the poop that he was collecting at the beginning was specifically to figure out what was wrong with that elephant that was collapsed on the ground.
True.
Like, I think a lot of his job involves poop.
True.
But there, I think he's doing all sorts of ecological tracking and so on and so forth.
Was he a doctor?
Yeah, I've got him listed as Dr. Andrew Stain.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm just so curious about his character because I feel like none of these characters got a real, like, in-depth look at them. You know, we didn't really get any, like, we didn't get too much depth into each of these characters.
Interestingly, Chi might be the one that we know the most about, and that's because we had a narrator for most of his existence in this movie.
Exactly. What makes Dr. Stain tick?
Yeah.
What drives him to test this fecal matter?
What is his motivation?
What is his motive? What gets him up in the morning to study migration patterns?
I don't know. Maybe the view.
That's true.
It is at least pretty. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So Stain is tasked somehow with bringing Thompson to the village where she's going to teach. We already know he's kind of awkward and clumsy and weird around her. And this the Jeep, the Land Rover, whatever he has, is just a fucking...
barely roadworthy.
It is a comedic... It's just a comedy routine in and of itself. It is so horribly.
The one door that he can take completely off. The
brake, it just goes all the way to the floor. He has no e-brake. He has no regular brake.
Yeah.
Jesus. He's got a rock to stop it from going down the hill, but... Dude, that would get a giggle out of you.
That was such a great... Because I love the moment where he finally gets it stopped and he goes to open the gate. And he's too close to the gate. And I'm like, yes, yes, you guys went even further with it. Fuck, I love a good, solid. See, that's where we differ. I love a good, solid physical comedy routine if it's done well.
I do, too. I just felt like, again, I give me a consistent, like, I love a joke that goes too far. Mm-hmm. And is but I also I love consistency in a film, and I have a hard time like keeping those like separate. You know what I mean? So
see, it almost.
But I did laugh.
It almost helps if you look at it as three different films because the documentary is hilarious in of itself, and everything going on with this comedy of errors with this doctor picking up Kate is also hilarious in of itself. And it's really the other stuff that it's just, it's weird. And when it's thrown in as part of the entire mixture, it does get a little messy. But I think those two separate storylines are both, there's a lot of funny shit going on there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Until all of a sudden it gets serious because everybody ends up crossing paths because we pick up Kate. We end up stuck in the mud. We've already talked about that. He ends up tackling her twice in his underwear, running away from animals. She gets stuck in a tree. The
wait a bit.
The car gets stuck in a tree. And so then,
oh my God, that stupid. I saw that coming. That stupid tree scene where you had a Jeep hanging from a tree like a piece of fruit.
Yeah. But then ultimately, Chi ends up finding them and tries to give away the bottle because he thinks that they are gods.
Because and they won't take it.
And they won't take it, yeah.
Because they think, he thinks they're gods, but they just think he's trying to give them his trash.
Yeah. 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 Just now say thank you and toss it over your shoulder. I mean, Luke Skywalker, that shit.
Now it's lost in translation. Luke Skywalker, like the lightsaber.
The lightsaber, yeah.
Yeah. It's a good reference.
There was a hand too.
I understood that reference.
Yeah. But yeah, so I mean they cross paths briefly and then like the doctor's off doing his own thing, but he keeps going back to try to woo Kate.
Mm-hmm. Woo.
Right? Yeah. And then they end up crossing paths with Chi again. Because it turns out that Dr. Stain's assistant can speak the language.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, because he spent some time with the tribe. You'd think the guy would recognize him, huh? I don't know. Or was it not this tribe? Is there another tribe?
Maybe there's a different tribe?
Maybe there's a different tribe, yeah.
Oh, word of mouth?
Word of mouth,
I don't remember. Is the reconnecting with Mpudi after she is arrested or shot and arrested?
Yes, he's shot and arrested, yes.
Yeah, so she goes out and I don't remember seeing the bottle with him at this point, but he goes and he's hungry. So he goes and he shoots him with his bow and arrow.
Yeah,
a goat.
He puts the bottle down to hunt this goat. And yeah. Comes and retrieves it later after he has put in his like 8 weeks of mandatory or 11 weeks of mandatory service.
Jesus. So yeah. Ridiculous. Anyways, he's basically arrested because he shot a goat with one of his tranquilizer arrows. And he's arrested because after he gets shot by the South African cop.
For poaching. Yeah.
For poaching.
And he doesn't understand anything was wrong. He was willing to share it.
Yeah. Yeah. But the guy took it for himself. So he went to go get himself another one.
Yep. And so, yeah, he ends up on trial and then they end up springing him by saying that he can come work for them.
Yep.
Yep. And so,
they hire Xi as their tracker for the remainder of his sentence in lieu of prison time, which I think is kind of a cool thing for them to go do. I think it was,
Yeah.
I think it was a cool part of the storyline.
Yeah. And I mean, I couldn't help but think that, like, this is like watching Amish in the City or something. Mm-hmm. Once they get him behind the wheel of a car and shit like that, right? Like it's it's very much, this person that before, a week ago had no idea technology even existed.
Yeah. And now like every time you bring something up, like it always reminds me of like a certain part in this movie that's so like it's so slapstick comedy. Like I remember during the car chase scene, there was a guy in a car, in like a bathtub car that gets ran off the road.
Yeah, yeah. Just random stuff.
This movie is filled with so much random shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I like the line of, where it's set up that, well, he doesn't understand gears, but it's okay. I told him to use any gear, and then the one he finds is reverse.
Yeah.
Right? Like, again, just, comedy of errors. Like, see, that storyline I thought was funny. Yeah. And ultimately, I mean, you say that, we've got Mr. Big White Hope that comes in, but ultimately, Chi is the hero because he's the one that infiltrates the camp and ends up tranquilizing all of the bad guys. Like, Chi is the hero.
True. Yes. And I 100% agree with that.
The white man takes the credit.
Thank you. Thank you.
But it's only to get laid, right?
It's not even the right white guy.
Well, that too. Yeah, that guy, what a piece of shit that guy is, eh?
Jesus.
The tour guide. Wow. Yeah.
What is his name? Jack Hind? He's the one, the bus drinking yeah, driver the, guy, yeah. mini bar boy, fuck boy.
Yeah. yeah.
So while you know they're doing the tracker thing, the gorillas have invaded Thompson's school, so Kate's school, taking her and the students as hostages as they make their escape to the neighboring country.
Yeah. Now, I mean, this is where we get a super tonal shift, right? Yes. Even though the guys are still kind of wacky with, you know, they're playing cards in the background and stuff like that, there's still like that is dark that you would encircle yourself with children,
yeah,
to protect yourself. Like this whole, he's got quite the dismount plan. Like yeah. It's sinister. I mean, it fucking effective too. Until, you know, Chi comes in and saves the day. But still, like, yeah, if there's one place where I really feel that tonal shift that you're talking about, where the inconsistency, this is it right yes. here, where he comes in.
That's a real world tactic. And like I said, that was kind of the thing is, like, I know, like, in that time frame when this movie was made, I don't know. I'd have to do more research. But like nowadays, like, do you know who Boko Haram is?
I think so. Somali? No.
So I don't. So he, I mean, I believe he's on like one of the terrorist watch lists, like high up there. But he's the one who legitimately was like raising children, like African children, like kidnapping them and basically raising child, you know, soldiers and like.
Okay. Oh yeah. Right. Yes. Okay. Yeah. Now. Yes.
Yeah. So
coming back. Yes.
Yeah. And it's. I mean, that's been a very real thing for decades. So mm-hmm. it's really kind of interesting if they did kind of make a story about this and it was a relevant headline back then, I would be like a little curious about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But anyways, it's a real tactic that people have used.
you know, it's kind of like how I felt watching the Batman,
mm-hmm.
because that version of the Riddler is just like, ooh.
Yes,
this
yes.
is someone that could exist.
There, yeah, that was another reason it was very, yeah, exactly, very scary yeah, because
very
of how real
visceral.
It was.
Yeah,
which I mean, there was a lot of people who like there were people on message boards discussing where he got his mask from. There were people like with that legitimate costume. There were people like that were following suit. Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
It's a very scary thing when you put something like that out into the world and it becomes like a real problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I digress.
But, you know, and it really does, like, I'm really just realizing this now as we're talking. It's like, yeah, two-thirds of this movie is very fun or, you know, slapsticky, and then it just gets real for
yeah.
the back half of this movie, and it's such an abrupt shift in tone.
And I would say this, his troops are basically Stormship Troopers because they cannot shoot for shit.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
oh,
we
terrible.
Got some bad, like, you got
bad
fully shots. Automatic weapons and you're not killing anybody. What?
Yeah. Yeah. We got Kate out there. I mean, city girl that is now a teacher. She's out there doing more damage than they are, you know?
Oh yeah. She is definitely rethinking her choices.
Yeah.
So Stain, and Pudi and she, they, like we said earlier, they run into, I don't really know, run into, but they come across, using the telescope, they come across what is his name? Bogo?
Hogo? Well, the Caravan of Evil, we could just call
yeah,
it
Yeah, Caravan
that.
Of Evil, yeah.
Sam Boga. Yeah,
that's
Sam
it,
Boga,
Sam Boga.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they come across him, and, like, there travels across land with the Circle of Protection, that old chestnut of a spell.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah. So, like you said, she being the hero, dresses up in one of the women's clothing and infiltrates and knocks out like a bunch of the guards, I think like eight of them or something.
He knocks out six. He was supposed to knock out eight, but because the card playing guys couldn't get enough of their cards, they had to go off and hide in the canyon.
Which is like another running gag because they yeah. were playing cards during the first attack with the helicopter.
What's funny is my two major exposures on this show to South African movies card playing was a big deal in Kill and Kill Again as well. Like, there was a whole, fight scene that took place while two guys were still playing poker on the hood of their car, and everyone else was fighting around them. Like, it's, it must be a South African gag or something that...
Interesting. Something else to do some research on.
Yeah.
See what the prevalence of card games are and gambling.
Yeah. But, I mean, ultimately, in the end, the bad guys are taken out. The other guys, the doctor gets the girl, eventually.
With some more fancy driving.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. And our hero, Chi, has served his time. He picks up his Coke bottle and he walks to the edge of the earth. Yeah.
Somewhere called God's Window, which I think, is that not the, no, I don't think that's, I was going to say that's, I think that's South America.
It is something that's a border between one African country and another, I believe, is this God's Window. And I mean, you gotta look at that and think that has to be a real shot, right? Like, don't think there was any kind of matte painting or anything to that. I want to say what a view, but like what an impressive, awesome thing.
Absolutely. If that was some kind of effect, it was done really well because that looked very, very
better
real.
Than the helicopter. That's for sure.
But yeah, he ends up throwing the bottle over the edge and going back home.
Yeah. Frodo gets to go back to the Shire.
It's over. I've done it, Sam.
And he did it in one movie.
Yes. God damn it. And he didn't hesitate either. Like somebody. Frodo.
And there we go. That's The Gods Must Be Crazy. Oh boy. Now, Aaron, on IMDb, it scored 7.3 out of 10 and has a Metascore of 73. And on Rotten Tomatoes, it has 85% on the tomato meter and an audience rating of 84%. But Aaron, those are just numbers. Like a Coke bottle to the head. Hit us with some reviews.
I love that. That was a good intro.
Good scores for this.
Yeah, I was really impressed with 84%. Like, I was really friggin' impressed.
Yeah.
Kyle C. on Rotten Tomatoes gives it 4 out of 5 stars. It says, hilariously satirical and ahead of its time. The slapstick humor plays out almost like an old silent film. I would agree. Yeah, but the narration takes it up a notch. The timing is just spot on every time. It gets a little slow at times, but ends on a high note.
Now, I mean, he brings up the silent film thing, and part of that also might just be from that increased frame rate that they have. I gotta say, I don't like that style.
Yeah.
I don't like the sped up footage. I found it annoying after a while.
Yeah. Again.
Yeah. Bringing Yakety Sax. Let's do this.
Yeah. Kurt D gives it 5 out of 5 and says, this low budget family friendly comedy with a simple yet ingenious premise. The critics are mostly right on this one, though I disagree with those who say that it reflects the values of the apartheid system. If anything, it was rather subversive in the context in which it was made. I would also opine that its allegory is still relevant today in many respects. Great movie. Well, Kurt D, you take your your $5 words and you fucking fuck off, Kurt.
Just fuck your just fucking fuck your fuck face. Fuck.
Yeah, yeah. You took our jabs.
Take that.
Fuck you, Kurt. Sounds like a white person's name. This one actually has no name, and I kind of appreciate that, but it's a 1-star review. And it says, the reviews on here that commend the incredibly infantilizing mockumentary-style first act as, and I'm actually quoting here, feeling as though it would fit a nature documentary describing the first 20 minutes as not goofy-natured, made with actual bushmen in Botswana, who as subjects seem to be treated with as much dignity and respect as 1980 could muster. Well, the film tells you a lot more about Western paternalism than it does about apartheid South Africa, which I suppose in another sense are the same.
Mm. He wanted a history lesson.
He did.
He wanted that documentary all the way through, and he wanted to know some shit.
That guy needs to go watch like fucking History
Mandela
Channel. Like,
or
yeah.
Like, start with that one. That was a good way to dip your toes into learning about apartheid.
Go talk to your mom and ask her to drive you to the library. Stop watching Netflix.
We are the world.
We are a Variety staff, a top critic from Variety, this one gave it a fresh rating.
Okay.
Film's main virtues are its striking widescreen visuals of unusual locations and the sheer educational value of its narration.
Okay.
I honestly felt like this one is somebody who didn't watch the movie. I'm just saying.
They fell asleep for the middle portion.
Yeah. And for this review, I wish this movie was made in Australia because this reviewer's name is Sheila.
Okay, yeah.
So this little Sheila, Sheila Johnson from Time Out, she's a top critic, gave it a rotten rating. Okay. Offensively racist and too gormless even for the kids at whom it is evidently aimed. Third world cinema of a quite .. uncommon kind.
Oh my.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Pause for effect.
Yes. I'll do one more. Where's my DM? Sorry, give me one sec. My IMDb is acting like a dick. There we go. Okay. So this one gave it an 8 out of 10. This one's on IMDb. 8 out of 10 stars. R.B. Verhoef. This is back in 2004 and said, this is not a great movie, but it uses the difference between the civilized white man and against the uncivilized Bushman. And with that simple tool, it becomes hilarious. Fuck you, man. That's all I'm going to say. Civilized in the white man's eyes, I must add to that. This is one of these movies where every gag works, no matter how simply and silly it is. Most of the time, the movie is slapstick comedy the way we see it in Chaplin or Laurel and Hardy shorts. We have the fast-forward sequence where people are running away from something. So I really feel like this is a very polarizing movie when it comes to reviewing it.
Yeah, it seems to be.
And you either love it or you hate it. And you either find it racist or you don't find it racist at all.
Okay.
And I'm not saying, I think from the reviews that I read and from you know, going through some of these statements, I don't necessarily think that it's necessarily anything in a bad way. I think that this actually almost makes it a little bit more endearing of a film because of the fact that it's so polarizing and because you can either see a lot of value in it as an educational tool or and comedy or like a, kind of a mix of both or completely separate. You know, I think everybody's opinion is correct on this film. If you find it to be offensive, if you find it to be slightly racist, you're not wrong. But at the same time, you have to be able to, and a couple of people did say this, but you have to be able to watch a movie like this the same way that you go when you watch something like, hell, if a Jewish person would go and watch something like the Bastards, you know, the what was that one called with it was a Quentin Tarantino film, Inglourious Bastards. Yeah. So like, yes, they throw around like a lot of offensive terms, which can make a movie offensive, but the movie itself is not intended to be offensive. It's intended to be comedy.
Mm-hmm.
So nobody says you have to watch it. Nobody says you have to think it's hilarious all the way around. Watch it for what it was meant to be and then take away from it what you do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Fair enough. Right on. Yeah, I think that's well said. I mean, it's tough because, I mean, I'm going to be the dirty racist here that says I'm one of the ones that falls into the camp of I don't see the racism in it. Some of it's been pointed out to me now. And I see, oh, okay, yeah, that might not have been right. But it's kind of funny because I have to applaud this as our most diverse movie that we've ever had. Mm-hmm. This is the movie that we have had on this show with the least amount of white people in it. You know, so it's weird to, like, say it's racist, but I have to applaud that fact that, like, you know, and when I compare this to the other South African movie that I watched, that one was racist.
Yeah.
You know, comparatively, at least.
Well, I think, like, looking at, like, Animal House.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Animal House, we both agreed, like, that movie did not age well.
No.
Like, it's very offensive. Yep. Very offensive. Mm-hmm. But again, even if I'm a woman and it's like offensive towards me, even if I'm black or if I'm gay and it's offensive towards me, like being able to put a movie in and seeing it and understanding yet, like this can be seen as racist. Yeah. This can be seen as offensive, but still like watching it and knowing like at a certain time in the world, this was allowable. This mm-hmm. was accepted. You know, that's more of a history lesson than it is meant to offend people.
Yeah. And so just even in this discussion over the last hour, I can see how 44 years has not been kind to this movie, or mm-hmm. or at least knowing now what I didn't know then has definitely changed how I can view this movie. But from an entertainment point of view, I still loved everything with the Bushmen. I thought the nature documentary portion was hilarious. I was there for all the physical comedy. The movie itself was messy. And I definitely, through talking, have seen the tonal shift that it's like, oh, no, yeah, that, like, the movie is a bit messy, but pieces of the movie are absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
And I love that about this movie, and I still love that about this movie, but, yeah, I can see how it's not as shiny as, you know, I would have thought it was before rewatching it, you know?
Yeah.
So I guess that's my final take on it is it's still worth a checkout. And like Aaron said, you'll get out of it what you get out. But yeah, I found the funny bits funny, at least.
I found, you know, and I found some parts that were funny. I think, you know, they're tonally, consistently with the storytelling, like devices, like the narration. Again, I like more of a consistent film. You know, the same thing could be said for George of the Jungle. You know, Brendan Fraser had to be the white guy that saves the day. You know, who knows? Like, there's like a lot. I mean, it happens a lot in cinema, but at the same time,
you've either like, got that or the Magic Negro, like Legend of Bagger Vance or something like that. You know,
exactly. Like the Haunted Mansion. You know, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
But I think again, the win here is being able to go back and watch this film. While being like, again, go into this film, educate yourself on apartheid, educate yourself on things that went on in South Africa around, you know, the 80s and the 90s and even before that, and learn, and then go in and understand where this era was and understand that this, I mean, it's a comedic film that may not land these days, but at the same time, it's from a completely different time.
Yeah. And a completely different place.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. The Brits have a different style of sense of humor. I'm sure South Africans have a different style of humor than we do. So it's to be expected. That's a very good point, man.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, we have to tie it all up with, because I did not bring it up earlier that, you know, because it's a strange import.
Yes, it is a strange import.
Have yet to even mention the subject for this month, the strange imports. But there we go. That's South Africa. That's The Gods Must Be Crazy. And that's our show for this week. Oh, boy. First time that Aaron and I have, like, really been opposed on opposite sides.
Well, that's good discussion, you know?
It is good discussion, absolutely. And that's why we love you, Aaron. So if you like that show, you know, the usual things, share our posts, go over to whatever app you listen to our podcasts on and give us 5 stars. Or if you want to be a financial supporter and get a shout out because you're an executive producer, go to patreon.com/IUsedToLikeThisOne. And then I do something like, hey, Joshua Blum did that. You know, he gets a shout out because he's an executive producer. So Joshua Blum of the 13th Hour Podcast. Yeah, go do that. Or if you have any suggestions for the show, go to IUsedToLikeThisOne@gmail.com. Send us an email there. Find us on social medias. I make memes. I was so proud of my Memento memes. Oh my God. I'm still thinking about those. I love those ones. And Aaron, thank you so much once again for joining as substitute co-host. If people want to find you doing your usual stuff that isn't this, where can people find you?
Check me out at Oblivion Bar Podcast. Basically, the Oblivion Bar Podcast is my main podcast that I help co-host with my buddy Chris Hacker. It's more of an up-to-date, you know, nerd culture, hot topics, movies, shows, video games. You guys can find me on my personal social medias at Better Actions on Twitter, at Better Actions TTV on Instagram. And lastly, I'm doing some brand management work for some small creators, and that can be found at BA Management for You on Twitter.
That one's new. I'll have to give that one a follow. And of course, Colin is off doing his show. Colin, where are you?
All right. If you're in the Edmonton area from April 17th to the 27th, you can find me performing at the Walterdale Theater in the production of The Swearing Jar. I play Owen. It's been a lot of fun picking up some new skills, learning how to play the guitar. So would love it if you came out and watched it. And if you do, I hope you enjoy it. Drop me a line and let me know what you thought.
There we go. Drop in the audio there. And music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band, Carter in the Capitals, anywhere you listen to music. Oh, boy. Aaron, a strange imports month. Oh, boy. Oh, did I say Lyndon Carter? Look for his band, Carter in the Capitals.
You did.
Yeah, music by Lyndon Carter. Fuck, you should be listening to Carter in the Capitals. They're fucking awesome. They're funky, man. I love them. They're the greatest.
I'm going to add them to my IMDb, or not my IMDb, my Spotify right now.
Yeah. So Strange Imports Month, Aaron. Boy, oh boy, oh boy. We've got some interesting choices coming this way. I mean, especially if the Gods Must Be Crazy is any indication of where we started this month.
That was an unexpected topical movie.
So now next up, we've got one of yours. Like, I mean, you brought two to the table. You're like, if I'm going to co-host, fuck, I'm going to bring some of the movies to the table. So
hell yeah.
Yeah, so is this one a superhero movie?
You might just have to wait and find out.
Okay, I remember you briefly describing it to me. So next up, we've got Zebra Man. So where is this one from?
I want to say it's Japanese.
Japanese? Okay.
Yes, I believe this one's Japanese. But yes.
If we're wrong, we'll know by the next recording.
Yes. So Zebra Man. Oh, man. I. You know what? Zebra Man is.
Should I go into it blind? Should I? Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I'm just going to say it is the story of an unknown superhero. I'll just leave it at that.
Okay.
And it's fantastic. I guarantee you, if you don't love this movie, I don't know. You win like a prize or something. If you don't, I feel like you're gonna fucking love this one, man. I feel like you are.
Well, right on. I look forward to it because I know nothing about this movie.
As soon as you watch it, I need you to message me. Whenever you do watch it.
Hopefully there's not more than one movie named Zebra Man out there, otherwise I might have trouble.
No, there's definitely not. Okay. There's definitely not.
Well, there we go.
I mean, other than the sequel, Zebra Man 2, Attack on Zebra City.
Yeah.
That's legit the title.
Oh, that's real. Oh, shit. I thought you just plucked that out of your ass as a joke. Oh.
Absolutely not. I have them both on Blu-ray.
Nice. Nice. Okay.
I had to hunt that down. Yeah. That's how much I loved it. I saw it one time and fell in love with it, and I've loved it ever since.
Well, I looked it up at the library, and I couldn't find this one at the library. Your other choice is at my library, but this one isn't. So, yeah, so I'll have to go to some dark web areas to find this one, maybe. I don't know.
Or, go in peace, my friend.
Or maybe it's on, like, fucking Tubi or some shit, you know? One of these random places that you never think to look.
And I can't even look for you because stuff is different where you are.
Yeah, that doesn't help. Yeah, exactly. Well, there we go. Until next week, I'm Sean Wells.
And I'm Aaron Knowles.
And we'll see you for Zebra Man on I Used to Like This One.
I'm so excited for